else that feels off. She presses the heel of her hand to her forehead wearily, and that's when I see them. What are those marks on your arm, Jen? Huh? She looks down at her wrist, at the exact place the marks are, and pulls her cardigan back up onto her shoulder. I caught myself on the door frame. What time is your train back? Two little red spots burn on her cheeks, and she looks away. She's always been a useless liar. But maybe it was the doorframe this time, because her disastrous relationship is behind her now. It's just, she seems so awkward about Brody's mark, and now hers. Jen, you'd tell me if there was something wrong, right? I feel a lump rising in my throat. The furtive look on her face, the heat spots on her cheek. That's how she used to look before, when she was in her bad time. That's what we call it now to avoid saying that loser's name. I'm more worried about what's happening with you, she says flatly. I need to get out of here. There'll be more money soon, I say, gathering my things. Jen sighs and then nods, patting the money in her cardigan pocket. Thanks. It'll really help. But what I said still stands. What's that? I can only give you a month, and then I'm out. Sorry. I stare out of the window as the city slides past, pressing my fingertips to my temples, forcing the noise in my head to quiet. It doesn't matter what Bets wants. It doesn't matter what Trent is hiding. What matters is finishing this, once and for all. Chapter 23. Jen. The sound of the front door opening makes her jump. It slams shut, rattling the frame and echoing through the short hallway. Brody stirs, a faint whimper escaping his lips, but he doesn't wake. Pete's frame fills the doorway, and Jen braces herself. His eyes look sore, his jaw set tight. She hasn't got the energy for yet another argument. Has someone been here? Pete says carefully. Jen swallows. It unnerves her how Pete sometimes seems to know things he shouldn't, as if the house itself whispers secrets to him. My sister called in, she admits. She came to see how Brody's doing. Oh, she's remembered she has a son now, has she? That's touching. Jen blinks. I'm glad she came. She gave me some money to help out. His eyes sharpen. How much? A couple of hundred, Jen says without hesitation, already prepared for the question. She reaches into her cardigan pocket, pulling out the cash. She hands it over, not allowing her thoughts to linger on the other £800 hidden away in Brody's sock drawer. Thanks, love. Pete pushes the money into his pocket. What did she have to say? Did you give her the 1 month ultimatum?
I did. She said things are going well in London, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Pete looks relieved.
Look, I know I've been an idiot, he says quietly, sitting down next to her. I feel like I'm carrying too much, Jen. I can't seem to get a job, money's tight, and having the kid here.
He exhales sharply, shaking his head.
It's not an easy situation to manage for me. For us.
For us. For once, he's not just thinking about himself. The wind has really got up since Alicia left. It rattles at the drafty windows, threading through the house like a low moan. Pete stands in front of her, his eyes softer than they've been in weeks. His hands open in a rare display of vulnerability.
I know it's difficult, but that doesn't mean you have to take it out on me, Jen says, looking away.
His jaw tightens, but instead of snapping back, he steps closer, his expression kind.
I don't want to fight.
His fingers touch her arm lightly,
I see something so much better for us than this, Jen. A clean slate. A home somewhere new. Just you and me. That's why I tried to put my foot down about giving Alicia the time limit to get her act together. She frowns. I know, but I want Alicia and Brody in my life too, Pete. Fair enough. But she's got her life, and Brody's her responsibility, not yours. His thumb strokes her skin, coaxing. You don't have to keep carrying her burden, you know. We can leave all this behind. Remember that cottage on the coast we once dreamed about. No more stress, no more interference from other people. The wind picks up again, rattling the glass, and for a moment, she lets herself picture it. A small place close to the sea in North Yorkshire. Salt air instead of tension in her lungs. No history, and no expectations of each other. Just peace. She'd really believed in that at one time. Pete cups her face, his touch warm and familiar. I love you, Jen. That hasn't changed, and it never will. She looks into his eyes, and she could swear he believes every word he's saying. And in this moment, Jen really wants to believe it too. Chapter 24. Alicia. During the train journey back to London, my head throbs, pulsing with my darkest fears. I massage my temples, trying to ease the ache, but it does no good. I finally texted Trent back when I boarded. On my way. I can hear Betts's voice, as clear as if he's still whispering in my ear. That crooked smile, the cruel spark in his eye as he watched me from across the room. He's forced contact and made it clear he's watching my every move, but he still doesn't know the full extent of what it is I'm doing, and I need to keep it that way. The only way to keep him off my back is to give him something, something on Trent, something real. And I have to find it before he discovers what I'm up to and carries out his threat against my family. On my phone, I Google different combinations of Trent and Saskia's name. Then, frustrated by the lack of information, I simply Google Saskia's name with no other details attached. I scan through the first page. Many links leading to other Saskia Portmans around the world, including Facebook, X, and Instagram pages. Then my fingers stop scrolling, and I click on a link that takes me to a public forum on bereavement. May 2024. New thread. I miss her every single day. Hello. I feel so lost without my daughter, Saskia. I don't know if writing here will help, but it's been 6 weeks now since she died, and every day feels harder than the last. I keep going through her old photo albums, looking at pictures of her as a little girl, when she lost her first tooth, her sixth birthday party in the garden, the way her hair always seemed to have a mind of its own. So many images of her clutching a favourite teddy bear she named Mr. Fluffy. Saskia used to say she was going to grow up to be a teacher because she wanted to help other children. I always thought that kind and caring nature would take her far. She grew up to be a beautiful, bright young woman. Saskia was so full of promise, and best of all, she was thoughtful and kind. She worked hard at her job in the hospitality industry, and her boss always said how clever and creative she was. She'd call me if she was away, even just for a couple of days, always saying, "I'm just checking in, Mum, letting you know I'm fine." She never forgot me, never forgot where home was. That's the kind of person she was, always thinking about others. But now she's gone. Just gone. And although they haven't said as much, it seems to me that the police have her pegged as some kind of party girl, like her own recklessness or carelessness was her undoing. But that wasn't my girl. She wasn't into Wild Nights Out or anything like that. It hurts so much to think that no one's fighting to find out what happened to her. I even thought about trying to investigate her death myself, but I wouldn't know where to start. The CCTV wasn't working the night she died. What kind of posh apartment building in London doesn't have working cameras? I feel so small and powerless. The house is deathly quiet without her. I miss hearing her voice. Her laugh. Her terrible singing in the shower. I miss the way she used to throw her arms around me and say, "Love you, Mum." It's hard to imagine how I'll keep going without her. Thank you for listening, whoever you are. It helps just to get the grief out and to know maybe someone might read this. Perhaps it might even help someone else who's suffering too. Jay Portman, Saskia's mum. Comments. At TinyDolly2025. I'm so sorry for your loss. There are no words that can take away the pain, but please know you're not alone. We're here to listen and walk this road with you. Be gentle with yourself. Much love. At Afghan Hero reads, losing a child is the hardest thing any parent can face. It's okay to feel however you're feeling. There's no right way to grieve. I found that taking it one breath at a time helped. Sending you strength and love. At Living the Bay Life 187, my heart breaks for you. I remember the early days feeling impossible. You are not alone. It turns my stomach that Saskia's mother has had to resort to reaching out to complete strangers online because nobody wants to help. Her daughter's death left behind by the people around her, like the fields the train is whisking past right now. Saskia's mother is reaching into the void, hoping to find someone, anyone, who can share this unbearable weight. My heart squeezes when I realize that, although I can't bring her daughter back, I might be able to help her come to terms with what happened. I close the forum window, as if I can lock her words away inside the screen, make them less real. But I know it's too late for that. As a mother myself, I can't stop thinking how Mrs. Portman must feel, losing her daughter forever, and yet nobody, not even the police, seems to care. I open my hidden photos folder on my phone, and find the photograph of Brody I removed from my phone wallpaper the night I met Trent. His little face fills the screen, my entire reason for living. He's all rosy cheeks and golden curls, grinning and proudly holding up his latest Duplo masterpiece to the camera. I feel the sting of tears as I think about the listless, ailing boy I'm letting down, leaving him behind with my sister, with a strange guy calling unannounced to ask about our whereabouts. My thumb brushes Brody's image, tracing the soft plumpness of his face, though it's just a cold, flat screen beneath my touch. I already ache to feel the warmth of him next to me again, to press my face to the top of his head so I can breathe in that clean, sweet smell that's uniquely his. Mrs. Portman can never do that again with her daughter. It's too late for her, but not for me. I blink back the tears and remind myself it's not forever. Soon we'll all be back together again. Nobody can stop that happening. I tighten my grip on my phone. I don't have time to dwell on the past, on mistakes or what-ifs. I need to act. I need some leverage. Bets wants something on Trent. Trent wants something from me. If I can play them against each other, if I can get my hands on the right information, I might just find a way out of this. A way to keep Brody safe, to get free of Betts's never-ending demands, to get my money from Trent and disappear before either of them realizes the game I'm playing. I stare out at the countryside rushing past. This isn't about surviving anymore. It's about winning. I scroll through my phone, considering my next move. Betts won't wait much longer. Neither will Trent. It's time to make my move. I take out the business card Betts pressed into my hand last night and dial his new number. I grip the phone tightly to steady myself. It rings once, twice. Then he answers.
Alicia.
His voice contains a low thrum of threat.
I didn't expect to hear from you so soon. Nice you're so keen to chat all of a sudden.
If you'd stop messing around and tell me what you want, I could focus better. There's a pause, a faint chuckle on the other end of the line.
Now that's no way to start an important call. Why not a friendly, hello Steve, how have you been?
I don't have time for games.
Oh, Alicia,
he says softly, his voice dropping, cold and mocking.
Don't be so dramatic. You've done a splendid job reinventing yourself. New city, new faces, not to mention a new boyfriend. You're a fast worker, I'll give you that. Straight to the top of the orbit, no messing around. But see, I'm beginning to wonder where your loyalties lie.
I imagine the smirk on his face, feel the satisfaction he's drawing from this. He'll know exactly how much he's unnerving me. And he's relishing it. I told you I'll get you what you want. I'll find it.
Agreed. But ignoring me makes me very angry.
His tone is suddenly sharper, and I can feel the flicker of danger there, just beneath the surface.
Does Trent know who you really are? Or are you managing to keep him in the dark for now?
We agreed no contact. You have to give me the space I need.
It's interesting seeing how far you've come. You've managed gold digging on a grand scale. Congratulations.
His voice drops lower.
But if you're thinking of double-crossing me, then think again. That's if you want to see your cute little boy again.
The breath catches in my throat, but I force myself to respond. What is it you want?
You know what I want. Information. And seeing as you're so cozy with the enemy, I've been expecting you to tell me your way in. A bit of a test, if you like, while I've been finalizing some inquiries of my own. I know he's got a weak spot, and so must you by now.
I stay quiet. I'm not ready to mention Saskia Portman yet.
Where are you now?
I hesitate. I'm on a train heading back to London.
What's your ETA?
I frown. 3:50 at King's Cross, why?
Meet me at 4:30. I'll text you a postcode after this call. Get a cab there and I'll be waiting in my car. We'll talk then.
But why don't you just tell?
Don't be late. My patience is wearing thin.
He snaps.
You don't get another chance, Alicia.
The line goes dead. Chapter 25. The journey from King's Cross to Betts's meeting point will be 22 minutes by car.
Don't be late. My patience is wearing thin. You don't get another chance, Alicia.
My stomach tightens when I remember his threat. The way he masked his poisonous words with a polite smile in the Jupiter suite makes me sick to my stomach. Just thinking about it starts my skin crawling. I expected him to leave me alone for a while when I came to London, but now I find myself caught between him and Trent. I reach the rank and slide into the back seat of a cab. An overpowering smell of air freshener and something greasy that clings to the car's interior hits me. I read out the postcode Bet sent after our call, and the driver glances at me in the rearview mirror and says, Alder Lane, right? Yeah, I mutter, wondering what Betts is waiting to tell me there. I'm angry at Betts, myself, angry at the trap I've allowed myself to become caught in. I've had my eye on the money and not on my son's safety. My hands clench into even tighter fists. The place looks desolate, a disused industrial yard, weeds pushing up through cracks in the tarmac. The driver hesitates as he peers through the window. Are you sure this is the place you want, love? Yes, thanks, I'm meeting someone. I force a smile and open the door. The driver raises a friendly hand when I get out, and I watch the car crawl slowly back across the gravel and out of sight. I scan the yard. A gleam of black and chrome catches my eye. A black Range Rover, outsized and predatory, is parked alongside the far wall. The passenger door swings open.
Get in!
A voice calls out, but I can't see anyone yet. I hesitate, glancing around. The place is deserted. Of course it is. It's Bette's style to want me feeling as vulnerable as possible. My boots scuff the ground as I approach. I ignore the driver and peer into the back seat. Bette's lounges there, his grin as oily as the gel slicking back his hair. He's not a handsome man. His pockmarked face too pinched, his teeth yellowed. But he thinks he is. The smell of no doubt expensive but eye-wateringly strong cologne wafts out, making me sneeze.
Come on, don't be shy.
He pats the seat next to him, and a large diamond ring on his pinky finger catches the light. It's so big it looks false, but Betts is a very successful man, if he's to be believed, so I doubt it is. I climb in, and the door closes with a quiet thunk, sealing me in. The cream leather seat feels cool against my legs, and thanks to his diagonal, sprawled position, I'm sitting too close to him, uncomfortably close. A privacy screen separates us from the driver, which only makes my nerves worse. Bette relaxes back, smirking.
You look on edge.
I'm not, I lie.
Course not. Someone like you must have a hell of a lower front.
He picks up a glass from the console, swirling the amber liquid inside.
So, how's your new life in London going so far?
My mouth dries up. I don't answer. Bette gives an unpleasant chuckle.
I think we both agree it's going extremely well. For you, that is.
His expression grows dark.
For me, not so much. I've nothing to show for it, see? And if there's one thing I can't stand, it's being taken for a fool.
I'm not taking you for a fool. I'm...
Hush!
His hand whips toward me, and I flinch. It stops a few inches away from my face, and his index finger lightly touches my mouth. It's all I can do not to recoil as my nostrils fill with the smell of tobacco.
You know why I wanted to see you, right?
His hand drops away, and I take a breath. I say nothing.
We'll get to why you blank my calls and messages later. Don't try to play a player, Alicia. I know you've got your claws into Connor's, and there's something you should have found out about him by now. If you were doing your job correctly, it would also show your loyalty is to me.
I need a bit more time so I can give you a complete picture, I say, desperate to buy myself some space.
I don't need the complete picture. I need dirt, Alicia, proper dirt. Not what he likes in the bedroom or how he takes his coffee in the morning. I need something that will make those fine, upstanding counsellors jump up and run next month. Something that will extinguish his investors' trust so they pull out their money.
I know that.
That's good. Because it's the only way I can guarantee that final decision committee will tell me the site is mine. And his dreams for a poxy orbit Manchester are dead in the water.
I'm working on it.
Right. See, you also need to keep your side of the bargain, because when we're square, I'll leave you alone. I'm a man of my word.
Bette's eyes turn cold and calculating. We both know he's anything but.
What I mean is, if you don't bring me something useful soon, then it's going to be a shame for little Brody.
My heart stutters.
What?
My voice is barely a whisper. Bette leans in, his breath hot and sour.
He's a handsome little kid. Be such a pity if something happened to him.
I know you sent someone round to the house, asking questions. He shrugs.
If you ignore me, I'll find ways to make you listen, sweetheart. No harm done. This time. But I can't give any guarantees if you don't come good. It'll be more than questions next time.
I'm warning you, Bets.
You're warning me.
He laughs then. A sharp, ugly bark.
You've got no cards left to play. And I'm getting tired of being nice. Here's the deal. Do as I say, or your cozy little life and all your future plans will be going up in smoke.
Panic wells up in my chest, but I dampen it back down. I have to give him something. I have no choice. I wanted to wait a bit longer to get more information. But if you must know, I think Trent Connors is hiding something about Saskia Portman. She's his ex-girlfriend who died at the Orbit 14 months ago. Betts gives me a wide grin and claps his hand against his thigh.
That wasn't too hard, was it?
Then he changes tack and says,
That's good. What else?
Trent told me he found her the night she died. He seemed gutted. Betts laughs softly.
I bet he did. Go on.
I found an article online that said she died in the Orbit swimming pool, but Trent denies that. He's lying about it, so I'm asking myself, why is that? It was an accident, I think, but nobody seems to know for sure.
So, what's your plan?
Nobody wants to talk about it at the Orbit, but I can definitely smell something bad around it. I just need some time to work through it, okay?
Not okay. I need progress on this, and quick.
Well, the trailer's gone cold, but I'll get you what you need, no problem. He lets out a menacing chuckle.
You think you're good. And generally, you are. But you're not that good. Sometimes you can't see what's happening right under your nose.
There's something about the expression on his face that I don't like. What do you mean by that?
I mean, sometimes the most interesting stuff happens a lot closer to home. You should ask your sister.
I sit up.
Relax, Betts says mockingly. We're just having a chat, right?
I open my mouth to challenge him again, but he shifts closer, his hand brushing against my knee. I shrink back, pressing up against the seat. Don't touch me, I snap. His hand doesn't move. Instead, his grin stretches wider and his fingers creep a little higher to my thigh, his eyes gleaming darkly. I act without thinking. My hand lashes out, knocking the glass from his fingers. It shatters against the console, spilling whiskey everywhere. Betts swears, making a grab for me. His fingers clamp around my wrist, digging in hard. I cry out, twisting away, but he doesn't let go.
You stupid little bitch, listen to me. I know a way to get more on this, but it needs someone on the inside. That's where you come in. So listen carefully.
Back at the Orbit, I feign illness to Trent. He frowns.
I would have sent a car. You know that. Why didn't you answer my earlier messages?
Sorry, I hardly looked at my phone.
You've probably caught something off your son,
he says grumpily.
I don't know why you had to take off like that. Surely you knew it might be catching.
I didn't think, but I needed to see him. No, how is Brody? Trent's caring, reasonable guy mask just slipped. But I can't be asked for a row about this. To do what I need to do, I need Trent on side. I need him to be unsuspecting. He frowns.
I can't afford to miss the next couple of days' meetings because you're missing your son.
Have you got anything interesting for me yet? Interesting?
You know, the reason I'm paying you a six-figure salary?
He snaps.
Dirt on Betts,
Not yet. But I should have something soon.
Let's hope so. Because we've got a final decision coming up on the Manchester project in under a month. I'd hate for you to let me down on this.
His phone vibrates and he gets up, his footsteps echoing down the hallway as he walks with his phone clamped to his ear, his brow furrowed in concentration. I wait until he's left and pull out my laptop. I scroll way back through my old encrypted notes, scanning the pages I pulled together on Steve Betts a few years ago when I had my own business. His face stares back at me, from an old press photo, square jaw, gritted smile, the look of a man who spent his life making deals and keeping secrets. I tried to get the measure of him back then, but now, sifting through this again, I rue the day I ever got involved with him. At the time, I had access to material that was meant to be top secret, files I was never supposed to see, connections I wasn't meant to trace. Betts was careful, but no one can cover their tracks completely. I pull out a few names from the notes and start searching. Some are exactly as I remember. Businessmen with too much money and too little conscience. Their dealings littered with lawsuits and hushed-up scandals. A property developer accused of bribing officials. A financier whose hedge fund collapsed under suspicious circumstances. But now, I see the connections. These aren't just random names. These are the backers for Betts' Manchester campaign. I dig deeper, my pulse quickening. At least two of them have convictions for financial crimes in the UK, fraud, money laundering. One name makes my stomach tighten. I don't know exactly what he does, but I remember the whisper of it. Arms dealing, or something close to it. This is something. A thread I can pull. If I bring this to Trent first, keep him on side, I might just buy myself some time. If I play it right, I might even find a way to use it against Betts. Either way, I finally have something to work with. I can't tell if Betts is still in touch with any of them, but Trent will want to see this. He plays things cool, but I know how he operates. Information is currency. And I might just have stumbled on something valuable. Something that will make him want to keep me around. I save the new document for Trent, close the laptop, and sink onto the bed. My body is heavy with exhaustion, but sleep won't come. Betts' words keep circling, poisoning every thought. Sometimes the most interesting stuff happens a lot closer to home. You should ask your sister. What the hell did Betts mean by that? And why hasn't Jen replied to my messages? I texted her in the cab, again when I got into bed. Still nothing. Then there's Saskia. Trent swears he had nothing to do with her death. Betts claims otherwise. One of them is lying. And I need to figure out the truth before it's too late. I shut my eyes, but there's no escape. Saskia Portman's mother's open letter playing on repeat in my head. Word for word. A relentless echo I can't seem to silence. That night, I wait until Trent is asleep. I slip silently through the penthouse, my bare feet soundless on the cool marble floors. His office door is locked, just as it was before. I press my palm against the wood, frustration burning in my chest. Betts told me the secret to the truth about Saskia lies in here. I just need to find a way in. It takes me just a couple of days to come up with a plan. Chapter 26. Wednesday.
Investment meeting. Trent mouths at my bedroom door, pointing to the phone clamped to his ear and waving once before disappearing down the hall, talking into it as he leaves for work. Later, Ingrid lets herself in. She drops her bag, coat, and scarf on the coat rack like she always does, her keys rattling as they settle on the hook by the door. Her routine is exact, down to the rhythm of her movements, and I know her habits quite well now. She'll vacuum first, then dust the already immaculate surfaces. Then she'll start with the bedrooms before finally giving the kitchen one last wipe down. And the office?
Trent's made it clear she's not to touch it. But I remember the day he asked her for the spare key. I'd been nearby, hearing him grumbling about leaving his set of keys in the car, and he asked Ingrid to hand him the spare for the office. I stand by the doorway, waiting patiently. The vacuum hums in the hallway, the sound drawing closer as Ingrid finishes the lounge. It's now or never. She glances up as I enter, clearly surprised to see me. I'm sorry to ask, Ingrid, but Trent's going to be pulling up outside the orbit any time now, and he needs some paperwork taking down. I hold up a thick envelope, feigning the rush of someone about to get on a call. He asked if you could possibly take it down to him. I've got an important call in 5 minutes' time. For a split second, Ingrid's face had tightened with irritation. But as soon as I mentioned it's Trent's request and not mine, her expression softened. I know she'd do just about anything for him. Something about his looks and charm that has even this woman of almost 60 fluttering her eyelashes for approval. Ingrid willingly takes the sealed envelope I've filled with scrap paper. I add, he might be 5 or 10 minutes yet, if you don't mind waiting down there, but rest assured he's on his way. Ingrid mutters something, slips on a cardigan, and heads for the door. For a second, her hand wavers over the keys, but she thinks better of it, heading out without them, and the door closes behind her with a soft click. I don't waste a second. I snatch the keys from the hook and head straight for the office. The first key on the ring doesn't fit, and I feel a swell of panic as I try the next, but the third one clicks smoothly into place. I twist it, the surprisingly heavy door swinging open with the slightest creak, and then I step inside. Inside, it's different. Unlike the rest of the penthouse, the office is a chaotic blend of papers, files, and a couple of half-empty cups. A grand antique desk dominates the room, stacked with folders in haphazard piles, documents spilling over onto the mahogany surface. It's like Trent's crazy twin works in here, someone untidy and frantic who's hiding his real self from the outside world. I edge toward the desk, fingertips brushing across stacks of paperwork and invoices, charts of stocks and shares, property portfolios, calculations scribbled on notepads and scattered carelessly. It's a mess. I begin rummaging through all the stuff on his desk until I recognize the glint of small keys partially buried in a pen caddy. Desk drawer keys, if I'm right. I pull them out, trying each one until the top drawer unlocks with a soft click. I reach inside, pulling out the first file. The label catches my attention. S.P. Could S.P. stand for Saskia Portman? I open it, rifling through the pages, and my heart skips a beat as I take in the contents. Printouts of online articles, legal documents he signed regarding the removal of online references to Saskia Portman in relation to the Orbit or Trent Connors. I think about how put out he was when I said I'd found the Metro article. It looks like he's worked very hard to eradicate himself and his business interests from any mention of Saskia's death. Other documents include her passport and official transcripts of 2 police interviews Trent has had with the Met. I scan the sheets and read a few lines. Metropolitan Police. Interview transcript. March 2024. Present. D.I. Kumar. D.S. Hines. Trent Connors. D.I. Kumar. Can you tell us what happened on the night you discovered Saskia's body? Mr. Connors. It was late. Early hours. I went to bed with a migraine, but Saskia wasn't ready to call it a day. She insisted she wanted to go for a swim. She'd had a lot to drink that night, and, well, I suspected she might have taken something too. D.I. Kumar. As in recreational drugs? Mr. Connor nods. D.I. Kumar. Speak up for the tape, please. Mr. Connors. Yeah, she liked the odd line. D.I. Kumar. So you went back to the penthouse and Miss Portman went up to the pool. Mr. Connors. Yes. When I woke up a couple of hours later and she wasn't back, I had a horrible feeling something might be wrong. I tried her phone and it rang out, so I pulled on my clothes and went up there. So Saskia had drowned in the very same pool Trent tried to screw me in on that first night. He'd looked me in the eye a couple of days ago and lied through his teeth. My fingers trace over Saskia's name scribbled in the margins of other sheets. He's made notes about her spending patterns, phone calls, even receipts from her travels. And it's not just financials. I feel nauseous when I find stills from obviously covert cameras in the penthouse. One clearly shows Saskia unaware and in her underwear in the master bedroom. This file is an account of her life, a window into his surveillance and control of her. I swallow and look around the room. No cameras in here, but I'll need to check the whole apartment. The bottom drawer is locked, and I slide the key in, my heart pounding louder with each second that ticks by. It turns, and I pull it open slowly. Inside, there's another folder, labeled simply, Contracts. Taped to the inside cover is a USB memory stick, which I pull off and slide into my pocket. My fingers tremble as I flick through the paperwork, my breath shallow. At first, it's just names. Women I don't recognize, printed in crisp black ink. But then I see the non-disclosure agreement, dated a year before Saskia's death. The identical one he asked me to sign. I swallow hard, flipping through the folder. More pages, more names. Half a dozen, maybe more. Each one tied to a separate NDA, all within the last 5 or 6 years. My pulse pounds in my ears as the reality sinks in. This isn't about me. It was never about me for Trent. I'm just another name on a list. I think of the way Trent looked at me, the way he made me feel like I mattered, like I was different. The easy charm, the slow smiles, the moments that felt genuine. All of it, a carefully constructed illusion, a pattern, a routine. I grip the folder tighter, forcing my eyes back to the pages. Some of the agreements have been signed, neatly inked signatures sealing their silence. Others are left blank, unfinished, unclaimed. A chill snakes down my spine. I was so focused on bets, on playing this game between them, I didn't stop to consider the other places danger might lurk. Trent Connors is a master manipulator. But what he doesn't know is, so am I. I'm lost in the papers, my mind reeling when I hear it. The unmistakable sound of the front door opening. The slam reverberates through the silence before I can cover my tracks and get out of here. Footsteps thunder down the hallway, and the office door is thrown wide open. I ready myself for a confrontation with Trent, but it's Ingrid who stands there, her features knotted in shock. Her pressed uniform and polished shoes scream decorum, but the look in her eyes doesn't match. Her glare is mean and sharp, and her scrawny cheeks are flushed. "What are you doing in here?" she demands, her voice steely. A bolt of fear hits me. She's going to tell Trent. Of course she will. I can already picture it. The sharp cut of his disappointment. The fury when he realizes I've gone behind his back. He won't want explanations, won't even consider them. He'll see betrayal and act fast. I swallow hard, but I refuse to shrink under Ingrid's stare. She's been watching me from the start. Quietly assessing. If she smells fear now, I'm done. I square my shoulders. I don't owe you an explanation, I say, keeping my voice even. You're here to manage the penthouse, not police my every move. Her eyes narrow slightly. And yet, here you are, sneaking around Mr. Connor's private office. My pulse spikes, but I don't let it show. I step toward her, meeting her gaze head on. But I'd think very carefully before running to Trent about this.
I have quite an influence over him now, you know. I could easily convince him we don't need a private housekeeper. A flicker of something crosses her face. Hesitation? Amusement? I can't tell. She exhales slowly. Be careful, Miss Alicia. For the first time, Ingrid looks unsure. She turns to close the office door, the haughty mask slipping as something more conflicted flickers in her eyes. She sighs, and her whole body deflates a little. I can't say much more. Her voice is quieter now, almost soft. And I'll deny everything if you repeat this. But I'm telling you, woman to woman, you're not safe here. You should leave. The air between us crackles with tension. My heart races as I try to make sense of her words. Ingrid, the iron-fisted guardian of Trent's home, is warning me. Not safe, I repeat, my voice quieter now. Are you threatening me? Her expression hardens again. This isn't about me. I'm trying to do you a kindness. A kindness? I laugh bitterly. You've hated me since I moved in here. I get the feeling you'd do anything to get rid of me. I don't hate you, she says wearily. It's just not everyone here is quite who they seem. Bad things happen in a place like this. Are you talking about Saskia? I know about her death. Her face pales slightly. You don't know everything. Go now, while you've still got the option. Go to your little boy. How does she know I have a son? She'd been so silent when she came back to tidy up after the styling session last week. Who knows how many times she snuck in without me knowing, and maybe overheard my phone calls to Jen and even Bets when Trent has been out. He might be trying to help, but I have to find out what happened here. I have no choice, I say finally, thinking about Steve Betts's threats against my family and the reason I have to see this through. So I'm not going anywhere. Ingrid doesn't argue. She doesn't shout or push me any further. Instead, she regards me with something that looks a lot like pity. Our eyes meet, and then, without another word, she turns and walks away, her footsteps sharp and deliberate on the polished wooden floor. Trent's office feels colder somehow, as if the air has shifted in here. I glance at the keys on the desk, at the drawer I'd been rifling through before Ingrid barged in. My hands tremble slightly as I shove the keys back into the desk tidy, and then take the memory stick and grab the folder. Ingrid's words keep circling around my mind. Not everyone in this place is quite who they seem. Chapter 27. The penthouse feels unnervingly still now that Ingrid is gone, as though the place has been stripped of its heartbeat. The silence isn't comforting. It presses in, heavy and watchful. I linger for a moment, listening to nothing but the muted hum of the air conditioning and the faint sound of my own breathing. With the folder of documents wedged under my arm, I move quickly into the living room, my pulse hammering. I drop onto the sofa, Trent's favorite spot, my grip tightening around the papers. He spent hours here, staring out at the city like he owns it, like nothing can touch him. The thought unsettles me. I shouldn't be sitting here. I shouldn't be wasting time. I flip the folder open, scanning the pages, my breath coming fast. I don't have long before Trent gets back, and if he catches me with this, I push the thought away and focus. I need to find exactly what I can use. Something solid. Something that gives me the upper hand. When I plug the memory stick into the laptop, my fingers begin to tremble, but the click of the USB in the slot is sharp and final. There's no turning back now.
The laptop flickers to life and a series of numerical files appears. I double-click on them in turn. For each one, static hisses across the screen, breaking the silence of the room. But then nothing else. About 6 files in, the static hisses, and then an image appears. It's the orbit swimming pool. The date and time flashing in the top left corner. I catch my breath. It's a wide, serene shot, the blue water rippling gently in the glow of the underwater lights. For a long moment, there's nothing but the gentle rippling of the surface. It's hypnotic, lulling. But then she appears. I freeze the video, my pulse thudding in my ears. She stepped into view from the right-hand edge of the frame, her slim silhouette etched against the shimmering blue of the pool. Even in the grainy security footage, she's striking. High cheekbones, full lips, a delicate jawline. Her long dark hair tumbles over one shoulder, curled and bouncy. I know this face. Saskia. I've seen it in the Metro Online article, in the photos in Trent's office. But seeing her like this, alive, moving, it's different. It's eerie. Because for a split second, it's like I'm looking at myself. The resemblance is undeniable. The same long limbs, the same hair. Even the way she moves, it sends a chill through me. I press play again. She's laughing, though the video has no sound, her head tilting back in carefree abandon. Her cocktail dress clings to her like molten silver, catching the light as she wobbles, unsteady on her feet. Drunk, I think. Her bare toes skim the tiles, and she glances back over her shoulder and says something. Her movements languid and flirtatious, clearly a gesture meant for someone. Someone who answers her call. Trent steps into frame with an ice bucket in one hand and 2 glasses clasped by their stems in the other. His grin is confident, his eyes fixed on the beautiful woman in front of him. My chest tightens, bitterness rising sharp and acrid in my throat. He moves with a confidence I recognize. He owns the place, owns her, owns everything and everyone around him. My fingers curl against the laptop's edge, the hard metal biting into my skin. Saskia slinks out of her dress, the silk slipping to the tiles in one fluid motion. Beneath, she wears nothing but a wisp of lingerie, the kind that would make me feel underdressed and self-conscious. Her movements are sensual and deliberate. She knows she's being watched, knows the power she wields. Naked, she slips into the water with the smoothness of a seal, her body cutting through the surface with barely a ripple. Trent pours 2 glasses of champagne and sets them on the side before shedding his clothes with practiced ease, before following her into the water, as though this is routine, as though he's done this before, with her, with others, with me. I clench my teeth. How many women before me, before her, looked like this? How many more did he bring here, give the same promises, the same attention, only for them to vanish when he was done? There's a pattern, a routine. And now, I'm part of it. I watch, barely breathing, transfixed by Saskia's long legs wrapping around him in the water. She throws back her head, her laughter soundless but joyful. It feels obscene to watch, the intimacy of it all. The way they lock together as if their bodies were made to fit. It's sickeningly familiar. The laughter, the champagne, the easy way he draws her into his arms. I've seen this before. Lived it. For a moment, it feels like I'm watching a ghost of myself. A metallic tang fills my mouth as I bite my tongue. I want to slam the laptop shut, but I don't. I can't. Then something shifts. Trent bends forward, says something into her ear, and steps back. Saskia shakes her head, a small movement, sharp and final. Trent reaches for her wrist, but Saskia yanks away. Her movements become erratic. She gestures at him, agitated, her hands cutting through the air. She steps back, but Trent follows, closing the space between them again. She shoves him, not hard, but enough to make him stumble back a step in the water. Trent straightens slowly. Saskia's chest rises and falls, her stance rigid. She pushes him away again, her arms slicing through the water in jerky, disjointed strokes. Trent raises his hands, calm and placating, but Saskia is having none of it. She's shouting, her words lost to the silence of the video, but her fury is visceral and raw. She turns and swims to the edge of the pool. Trent follows, his movements steady and deliberate. He reaches for her leg just as she clambers out. Saskia turns, kicks out at him, and then she slips. The soundless video somehow makes it worse. Her head cracking against the side, a sickening motion that makes my stomach flip. She tumbles back into the water, and for a horrible moment, there's nothing. Just ripples spreading outward. For a long second, time seems to stand still. Everything paused. Then Trent goes after her, pulling her to the surface with a desperation that seems genuine. He shakes her, tries to breathe air into her lungs, his movements frantic, and then he stops. He just stops. Cradling her, his face tilted upward, caught perfectly by the camera. His expression is impossible to read. And then he lets her go. As easily as that. Her body sinks beneath the surface, swallowed by the water before she bobs back up again. Trent climbs out, his movements careful and considered. He picks up the ice bucket and his drink, leaving Saskia's glass behind. Then he gathers his clothes and walks out of frame without looking back. The static returns, louder this time, before the screen goes black again. I watch the footage again and again, before finally sitting motionless, the laptop perched on my knees while the video downloads, my breath shallow and ragged. My hands tremble as I drag the file into my cloud storage. The image of Saskia's lifeless form drifting in the water is seared into my mind, but it's not just the horror of witnessing her death that churns in my chest. It's shock and disbelief. Anger with myself that I could have been so gullible as to believe Trent's flattering assurances. My phone buzzes beside me, making me start. I open the notification, hoping it's Jen, but the text message is from Steve Betts. Any update? He's pushing me, using me. He's never going to let me go. What I found will blow his mind. It will give Betts the ammunition he needs to destroy Trent. Two men, desperate to ruin each other to win the contract for their projects. But I'm not ready to hand this over. Not yet. For the first time, I'm thinking beyond my own survival. Betts wanted dirt on Trent, and now I have it. But what I've uncovered about Betts is just as damning. They're different men, but they're both playing the same game. Bribery, blackmail, corruption. And they don't care who gets caught in the crossfire. Two predators circling each other, waiting to see who lands the killing blow first. What if I don't pick a side? The idea grips me. If I can be smart about this, if I can find the right leverage, I might just be able to burn them both to the ground and walk away free. The soft creak of the front door opening jerks me back into my body. Only me. Trent's voice carries down the hallway, warm and casual. The door slams shut behind him and I hear him kicking off his shoes, his phone dinging with one of the 100 or more notifications he receives in a day. He's back early, much earlier than he said. Calm. Keep calm. My heart hammers as I push my phone and the memory stick back into my pocket, close the laptop, and place it on top of the document folder. Picking them up, I lurch to my feet, grabbing my cashmere cardigan from the back of the sofa, folding it over my arm, concealing the items underneath. My mind races, the CCTV recording playing on a loop in my head. Has Ingrid told him what I've done? Hey. Trent steps into the living room, loosening his tie, his smile as polished as ever. Busy day? He doesn't know. I force a smile and keep it in place until it feels my face might crack. You could say that? I walk toward him, each step a tremendous effort to achieve without my legs giving out on me. I veer to the side slightly to get past him, but he moves quickly and grabs me, wraps his arms around me. Listen, I came back early because we need to talk. Have you got something for me yet? What? I look up at him, tightly clutching the laptop and file to my side, terrified one or both will fall to the floor and reveal what I know. What might he do? He could bash my head in and say I tripped. I'll end up silenced, the same way as Saskia. I'd like an update on where you are right now. Fine. I keep my voice strong and confident and wedge the folder from Trent's office under one arm. I move away from him and open my laptop, find the document I've been working on and set it on the coffee table in front of him. Trent leans forward, his eyes hungrily scanning the screen, his expression unreadable at first, but then his gaze sharpens. He scrolls onto the next page, then the next. I watch the shift in his posture, the tightening of his jaw, the way his fingers press the edge of the laptop. He exhales sharply through his nose and finally looks up at me. He says quietly, "Where the hell did you get all this?" I stare at the modular white coffee table in front of me, clearing my mind of swimming pool blue. I keep my voice even. Does it matter? Trent doesn't answer. He goes back to the report again, his eyes flicking hungrily over those names and the connections I've drawn between Betts' Manchester project and its investors. I traced two of them to financial crimes in the UK, fraud, money laundering, and this one. I indicate a name close to the bottom of the list. He's a ghost, no official records, no legitimate businesses. But there are whispers. Arms dealing. Shell companies, offshore accounts. He's backing bets, and his money is very dirty. Trent lets out a low whistle and leans back in his chair. I close the laptop and watch him coolly. I think it's safe to say that all of this violates the Manchester Planning Committee's approval criteria. Trent nods, his expression brightening. In less than a month, that financial planning committee is going to take one look at this and throw Betts out of town. No doubt about it, I say. His eyes meet mine, and for the first time I see something new in them. Not just intrigue, not just appreciation. Respect. He walks over to me. Gotta hand it to you, Alicia. This is exactly what I needed. I bristle slightly. My heart hammering as I clutch the folder tightly under my arm. I did it, and now Trent owes me. I intend to cash in that debt when the time is right. His subtle cologne, that I liked at first, smells acrid and false. His usually smooth skin is bristled with whiskers, and his eyes look darker somehow, as if they're pooled with shadows. I think about the stack of NDAs pressed close, all the women he's played over the past few years. And I think about Saskia, so full of life, until she suddenly wasn't. How he covered his tracks and then left her there, cold and alone in her watery grave. Gently, Trent's hand turns my jaw toward him and his soft lips cover my mouth, the tip of his tongue pushing gently inside my mouth. I force myself to respond, swallowing down the clot of revulsion that rises in my throat. I keep my eyes open, take in the pristine walls of the lounge and the eye-wateringly beautiful designer furniture. It's empty and clinical and soulless. All of it. Chapter 28. Jen. Thursday. Jen senses it the moment she steps into the house. Something is off. The air is thick with tension, pressing against her like a warning. She barely sets the doctor's pamphlets down on the side table before Pete steps into view, leaning against the kitchen doorway at the end of the narrow hall. His face is shadowed, his silence heavy. Jen swallows, fingers fumbling with Brody's pushchair straps. Hello, she says, keeping her voice light. Pete doesn't answer, just stands there, watching her. A chill creeps up her spine. Her mind races like it always used to do. The same question she always used to ask presents itself in her mind. What have I done? If she can just figure it out, work out what's made him angry, she might be able to avoid the worst of it. Always questioning herself and never him. Scanning through the past few days, every conversation, every move she's made. She lifts Brody out of his seat, pressing a kiss to his soft curls, trying to steady herself. Come on, sweetie. Her voice barely wavers, but her hands are shaking. Under Pete's gaze, she carries him into the living room, lowering him onto the rug among his scattered building bricks. Is something wrong, Pete? She asks finally. Pete gives that slow, knowing smile that turns her blood to ice.
Tell me again what happened when your sister visited,
he says, his tone calm, almost casual. The walls seem to press in around her. She came to see how Brody was. We had coffee, just chatted for a while. That was it, really.
And the money?
Yes, she left us some money. I told you that.
And how much did she give you again?
Her pulse pounds. He's setting a trap, waiting for her to step into it. 200, she says quickly. I gave it to you, remember? Pete exhales through his nose, shaking his head as if disappointed. Then he pulls a thick wad of cash from his pocket and tosses it onto the coffee table.
Only I found another 800.